Hi, girl.
Hey.
Thanks.
Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Sequel. This is the movie podcast where we're talking sequels and we do it in two parts. The first, an interview with an actor or someone involved that made the film worth watching. And the second, a discussion of the sequel, what they got right, what they got wrong, and how it could have been better. I really hope you enjoyed last week's interview with a true champion, a legendary casting director, Fern Champion. God, the story she had to tell about discovering the likes of Mickey Rourke, Cameron Diaz. We talked a little bit about Friday the 13th, but so much about Cheech and Chong that was just absolutely mind-blowing. And tomorrow's Friday the 13th. So, of course, we got to cover one, and we're covering the final chapter, the fourth one. Spoiler alert, it's not the final chapter. But before we get into this, man, one of my favorite horror movies of all time, I got to introduce you to my partner in the sequel-watching journey, Jamie Riccardi. Jamie, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Doug. How are you doing?
I'm doing great because when I go back and watch this movie, I've seen it so many times. And I know there's just little things that just like, I don't know, the nostalgia factor and just how great Friday the 13th movies like trump all the other horror ones in my mind because of all the characters within the movie.
Yeah, you know, I agree. This is definitely out of all of them, I like this one and Jason Lives the best. Like those are my two favorite. But watching it again, I do have a huge question about this movie. Huge.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, throughout the movie, my biggest question, I'm going to say it right now, is I don't know what the plot is of this movie. I don't think there's a plot.
We'll work through it.
All right. Because I'm very confused what's the plot of the movie. Otherwise, I mean, the second half of the movie is just amazing.
The whole movie is amazing. And that was the voice that you just heard of our horror movie sequel expert. Man, it's so hard when you have somebody that's been on this show so many times to break them all down. First, Fly 2?
No, Texas Chainsaw 3.
Texas Chainsaw 3, Leatherface, Fly 2, Return to Sleepaway Camp, Grizzly 2. Come on, what was the other one? I think we did this last time too.
We did it last time, but we forgot Return to
Sleepaway Camp. Amityville 2. So yes, this is the sixth one, and that is Chris Egan. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm really good. It's good to be back. As much as I truly 100% enjoy talking about those other sequels, I'm super excited to talk about this one because it's one of my favorite slashers. It's one of my favorite slasher sequels. Super fun movie, and I'm ready to dive in.
And you know, I didn't think I was going to have that many notes on this just because of the way I have tons of notes on this movie. Like this movie,
no notes.
You have no notes?
No notes.
Oh, well, your brain is a big note. I mean, you know, you don't really need, you know, written paper.
You know what? When I write notes, I stumble over myself. I'm like, oh, I got to get to this. I'm much better at just naturally having it pop into my head as we're talking.
Well, not all of us are as professional as you.
That is true.
Thanks.
So I did rewatch the Crystal Lake Memories chapter 4 just as a little refresher too. And it's so cool when you see that Joseph Zito, who directed, he worked with Fern. Fern casted this movie. She also casted Missing in Action. He directed that Chuck Norris movie. So going to this movie, he's thinking this is it. They're killing him off. Everything's set up to be like that. So the beginning of the movie, what's the thing to do? It's just a flashback of the first three movies all like put together.
I love that. I love that part. I thought that was just, you know, telling ghost stories, but like talking about all the movies, showing the kills. And it really goes right into it before the credits. Like it was, yeah. I loved it. I that was a great beginning.
Yeah, they do recaps in most of these sequels, but I feel like this is the one where it really makes the most sense because they did go in really thinking it was going to be the last one, or at the very least the last one that was going to be a Voorhees centric flick.
Yeah.
Being the horror expert that you are, did these movies come out the same time as Halloween? Like, was it a battle like every year? Like, you know,
no, actually, So you had Halloween 1 and 2, which were was like 78 and 81. Yeah. And then in between that, the first Friday the 13th was 80. So you had Friday the 13th, 80. The first four movies were 81 to 84. So they're banging them out every year. And you didn't have Halloween 3 was either 83 or 84. But that was not a slasher movie. That was its own thing. So it really wasn't trying to compete with this. And then Halloween didn't come back until 88 with Halloween 4. And Michael Myers came back. So that there was a huge leap in time. But you did have, by 84, now you were getting the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
You were starting to get other things. And then you had a lot of the one-offs in between this, in between these movies, like My Bloody Valentine and The Fog. You had a lot of one-offs. The Prowler, stuff like that. You know, they didn't have sequels.
So. And this is why you're our expert.
So I'm just going to ramble for 2 hours.
Now I wonder if like Mancuso, like in that documentary, he's a producer. When he was thinking about this one, I wonder if he was kind of influenced by like Carpenter, like, okay, 4 Jasons is fine. There were really 3 Jasons. We're done. The idea is stale. I wonder if that was his mindset or he was just like, I want to go on to bigger and better things.
Or do you think he was just like, you know what, we've done this story, you know, 3 times. How many times can you tell the story about a guy slashing people at a lake?
When it makes $31 million against a budget of $2 million, yeah, but you're going to keep doing them.
Is 5, 5 was the ambulance driver, right? Okay. So, but when does it start getting away from the lake? Is that...
They're pretty much at the lake or in the vicinity of the lake all the way through 8 until they get on the boat.
Okay, until Manhattan.
Yeah.
For 5 minutes. But
it's really like 1 and 2 are really at the camp. And then 3 through 5 are near the camp. They're in the same town area. And then 6 is in the surrounding area and the camp. It's a little all over the place. And then 7 again is like in the surrounding area.
Okay.
And, you know, it's really 1 and 2 and 6 are like the summer camp. They're at the camp. The counselors are there. The rest of them are kind of like in the vicinity of the lake and the camp.
And somehow the camp is never closed down.
No, all through these movies until 6. 6 is when it's reopened.
Yeah. Okay.
One, they try to reopen it, everyone dies. 2, they try to reopen it, everyone dies. 6, they actually open it, the kids are there. There are small children there.
Wild.
Well, you know what? I almost feel like that's like the first time you see children in these movies, right? It's usually like the first few movies, you don't see any, it's like all counselors, but you don't see any children.
Corey Feldman is the first.
Yeah, first child, shot, right.
And he's not at the camp. He just lives near there. And then it's,
which
and
is something we have to talk about.
Which, yeah. And let me tell you, he absolutely, for his age, he absolutely crushes this role.
Oh yeah.
Crushes it.
I mean, it's before his star really took off and you can see it already.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Well, he had 1 month that this and Gremlins came out in the same month.
Was it?
It was the same summer, 84.
Wow.
Yeah, this was April. This was April. Gremlins was June.
He said that in the documentary. He probably didn't remember either.
But being that age and having those 2 monster movies in a couple months.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he was filming it back to back. So his poor little child mind. It was the same thing with when they brought him back for part 5 for like the flashback sequence. They were like trying to break child filming laws because he was filming Goonies and they were like rushing him back over to do the flashback sequence for 5. But hey, let's talk about part 4, right?
Yeah, let's get right into it. So the end of that flashback sequence, we see the end of 3. And I love that they just a continuation. The next thing we see is like the ambulance, the helicopter overhead. It's like a big budget feel for a movie that's only $2.2 million back then. That's really nothing. But just the feel of the movie, you're like, wow, this is like sort of a big deal. They're all talking about this mass murder. He's dead in there. They're pulling the bodies out. And I don't know, dude, the way these people are when they're approaching this body, knowing this guy killed, they're like very relaxed, I think.
Well, not only relaxed, but they're pissed. Like the one ambulance, doesn't he go like, oh yeah, this is some emergency. when he's seeing dead bodies all over the place. And he's like annoyed that he got called for this.
Yeah, because they're dead already. He can't do anything.
So he's annoyed. He's like, yeah, I mean, at least let me see them die.
The only person that shows any like compassion or like emotion in the range of like being creeped out is the young paramedic, the young woman.
Yes.
Where, you know, she doesn't want to touch the body. You know, she's spooked, and it works. I love that opening sequence though. I love we drop out of the flashback. Like you said, the helicopters, the ambulance, everything's going. It's like fugitive light.
It is, and it's like very fresh because, you know, the massacre just happened, you know, and so this is like really like seconds after three, you know, which makes it that much better.
And you're getting the outside world coming in.
Right.
Like people other than the victims are seeing this horrible thing. So it's really, I love this goddamn movie.
It's the first time you see outsiders see what's going on, right? They don't show that really much in the other movies. So this is the first time you see the outside.
Yeah, it's really like, you know, one cop shows up at the end of the first.
Right, right.
You know, stuff like that. This is
or like a newspaper article. Like it's never like, you know, seeing it right in front of you.
Right. Yep.
And I love like the camera just like almost on the gurney with Jason, like going through the hospital, and then you get, man, sweet, sweet, nerdy Bruce Mahler as the perfect, what is it? Always. I think we had one movie, Death Wish 4. There was a compassionate, smart, intellectual morgue employee. Every other one, creep.
Everyone, every morgue guy that we've seen, they're always eating. They're always eating by the dead bodies. And they're the creepiest. Like it basically says that if you're going to work in a morgue, you have to be creepy. That's the only people that get morgue jobs, according to movies.
This guy.
Well, you know where he's from, right? He's in Police Academy.
Yeah, yeah. I meant the character, Axel.
Oh,
Axel. Well, like what I said, a perfect name, too, for a morgue employee. Yeah,
what a dick. Like I said, I've seen this movie, you know, 50, 100 times, whatever it is. I'm always like, yeah, that guy sucks. You know, he sucks. Yeah, he gets it. You know, he's murdered right away. Great. This viewing, I don't know if it's I have the new giant 4K TV, new sounds. I don't know what it is. I wanted to strangle him myself. He's eating, he's licking his fingers. And I was sitting on the couch right over here last night, and he's like, I want to fucking kill this guy myself. It was turning my stomach listening to him like smack his lip and just be like a grosso.
He was such an unlikable character right off the bat.
When he's saying, oh, she's cute. And the guy goes, she's dead. Still cute.
Yeah.
and then he starts to go, oh, you know, you go over, you take your pants off and the paramedic cuts him off. But he gets just enough out for you to really be like, fuck this.
Now, do you think, I mean, you know, again, they show this in movies all the time. Do you think morgue people are really like, you have to be creepy to be a morgue person? Like, do you think normal person? No. Okay.
I don't think you have to be a grosso. you might be a little weird.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming you have to be numb to everything you see, but I don't care how numb you get.
I've met a few people that work. I know one person that works in a morgue.
That tracks.
I've listened to podcasts, you know, about these people. I've listened to a lot of stuff and read a lot of stuff. They all seem they're actually very down to earth, and they look at it as like strictly like scientists. They look at it, a lot of them look at it, you know, in a very compassionate manner.
I'll tell you right now, this guy was not.
This guy's a monster.
This guy is looking under the sheets. Every girl that comes in there.
Yeah.
Egan, I would love to hear. I was about to, the night, my next thought before you said that was, I wonder if like morgue employees in like the 70s, 80s, and 90s were like, fuck you, Universal and Paramount, and all these people. Dude, how dare you make us look like creepazoids? Because that's what you think of from every all these movies.
We've
covered 70 sequels, and I'm telling you, only one morgue employee out of like 10 was a normal person.
I like the fact that we've covered so many sequels that have morgues.
Yeah, no, I've like, Anytime I've like read about a person or heard a thing about like the profession, like they come at it from a very like compassionate angle. It's like we're sending this person off to the great beyond, or, you know, we're taking care of them before they're put in the ground, you know, that's, or whatever. So it's weird. You have to be a little weird and shut off in a way, but then not shut off in other ways that I think most people are. Like, I don't want to think about death.
No, I agree. I can't imagine people in real life eating in area of dead bodies. Because first of all, I'm assuming the all
sure that room's got a desk or whatever.
Oh, that room's got a smell. I mean, you know, it's got a smell.
And then he puts his sandwich down on the body. What is it? He's eating a bagel with cream cheese. There's just cream cheese everywhere. Or
well, I mean, he's wants to meet the girl in the same. Like, now, again, I'm sure there's multiple rooms in that hospital. He couldn't pick a better place to meet her, that he wants to meet her in front of a dead body.
Wait, not even the fact that the dead body, the fact that he's watching aerobics on the TV with the mass murderer on a gurney behind him with the lights off.
Yeah.
But was that aerobics though? What was that? Because
softcore porn.
That's and of course, now I have to like look it up while we're recording, but that video.
you want the website of the aerobics?
The video that he's watching is it's used in other movies. I want to say it's in a trauma film or something.
Oh, really?
I mean the same video?
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same video. It's used in some other horror movie, you know, whatever it is, but it's definitely in something else, and I'm just going to Google it. So
that nurse, while our horror expert looks that up, the fact that nurse, he's like, come on, let's go in there. And you're like, why would you go with this guy? Why would you go with him? Oh, he's not going to go with him. And then she goes in there with him.
She seemed like she was grossed out by him in the beginning. And then she literally goes in there looking for him. And she walks in there looking for him in the dark.
Yeah. Are hospitals that horny? If you're a hospital employee, Halloween 2, everyone's horny in hospitals.
Well, I think in the 80s, I don't care what profession you were, everybody was horny.
Everybody's horny. I do like his line when he says, "Hey, that's you they're talking about, pal." And he pats Jason.
All right. I found the video. So it's a real workout video. It's called Aerobicize, and it stars Darcy DeMoss, who I'm just going to.
Wait, Darcy DeMoss from Jason Lives?
Oh.
She's in Jason Lives, and she's best friends with our future guest, Kathleen Kinmont. Look at that.
So maybe that's how they found her for the role.
I'm going to go on that. Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's great.
And you know, speaking of the nurse, did nurses wear those hats? I've never seen a nurse wear a hat like that. She wore like a hat, like it's like the 1930s, you know, like.
But maybe that hat signals you're horny. Maybe you get to work. You're like, I'm not horny. Don't wear the hat. I'm horny. Put the hat on.
Nurses were wearing some form of a hat like that, I think, up
in the 80s.
Yeah. Because even like, for example, I was just watching, I just showed my buddy American Werewolf in London the other day.
Oh, yeah, they were in
all that. The nurses are wearing the hat. I know that's England and they have slightly different uniforms and things, but wearing like the big white hat.
In England, don't they wear the bobby hat also?
Yeah, those cops were some silly hats.
Yes. Yeah. So I, you know, they're definitely known for wearing silly stuff anyway.
Going old.
So back to Axel and the horny nurse from the 80s. The fact that they're like getting it on, she's pulling the blouse down, they're hooking up, and then Jason's hand falls. Total cock block. And I love that from there, she's like kind of pissed off that Axel would do that when it was kind of her fault that she is hooking up with him in that spot. So maybe she just wanted an excuse.
Yeah, I was wondering why she was so mad.
I think it's the realization of
what am I doing in a morgue?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she was like in the moment, and now this, and then like that happens. So then she's like, oh, this jerk has talked me into like screwing him again. We're in the morgue, mass murderer. I touched the dead body. You know, and I think it's a culmination of annoyance and like anger just spilling out. It's a lot of frustration coming.
Yeah, but she seems a little like like mood swings, because like she leaves there in a, like she was really mad and she goes right to work the next, like the, she walks in the next room and starts,
I know,
and starts doing inventory. Like nothing just happened. So, I mean, like, I don't know what she wants.
Just to get her mind off of it.
And then the next scene was one that Egan was just screaming at the, he was cheering in the movie theater. And if he went in a time machine, watches in 84, just knowing that Bruce Mahler Axel puts Jason away in the freezer, doesn't close it. He doesn't close it. And then he pops the TV right back on the aerobics with Darcy DeMoss. And then, dude, I love that kill.
Okay. Before we get into this. So
yeah,
I have a question, because in other Jasons, he needs something to make him become alive. Electricity or twice, right? Once in the water and once. So how does he become alive here?
He's not dead.
He's just not dead. Oh.
So he was playing dead the whole time?
Yeah, he was playing dead.
All right, so he's pretending. He's pretending.
I slowed his heart rate down. He's like, I'm just going to wait it out.
Okay. All right. He's good at that. He does a good job.
There's the whole question of how is he alive in the first place? Because the whole reason this started is because he's supposed to have drowned.
Yeah.
That's never answered.
Well, I mean, not for nothing. I mean, after this movie, the fact that he's alive for any of the movies is amazing. So,
he's undead. We get into supernatural with that. So,
but he also has like, his body also heals miraculously, you know, from this movie on. So,
yeah, yes and no. He's like rotting in some spots, but other spots heal for some reason.
Yeah, he's fine.
I love the hand though.
So Axel gets his throat slit by that saw that they use in the morgue.
The hacksaw. Yeah. And twisted. And his head gets twisted.
Yeah, twisted.
Yeah, I love that.
Like he was already dead, I think, but I guess he just wanted to just add a little. He does a lot of like hand kills in this movie.
Injury.
Dude, yeah. The kills in this movie, the cool thing was that they brought back Tom Savini, who was, you know, basically Jason's father, quote unquote, in the first one, like just the special effects. In this movie, what I think it's so cool what they did for him was, if you look at Tommy Jarvis, it's basically Tom Savini as a kid, like with the mask building and everything and the way he was. And the kills in this movie, I think every one of them, I love.
I think his kills in this movie were the best of the four movies, like by far.
Out of the first one,
I mean the first three. I mean they weren't your typical, and they just it was more mass murderer kills.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't. Yeah,
yeah. All the gore effects are top notch throughout, and then I would say even, you know, not to jump ahead, but I think the most basic one is like the girl getting thrown out the window. But other than that, everything is like, I mean, it's a great kill. It's awesome.
I love that one.
But like everything else is like up close, gore, you know, blades and faces and things. And
even the nurse, when he goes in, she's like, oh, Axel, I told you no. And then just grabs her by the throat, puts her up, and then like a scalpel right to her heart.
Well, I also noticed one thing Jason does in this movie that I don't think I never noticed before. And I don't see him doing any other movies. He runs in this movie.
Yeah,
and he never runs.
He picks up a little bit of a pace in like three.
So you're saying that after this movie, he got like he was out of shape, so he stopped running.
Yeah, I think he runs. He does a little bit.
Seven's pretty badass. The way Kane does it in his first movie, he's like
he's still doing like the big lumbering.
Yeah, yeah.
But two, three, and four. He's quick. This one, it's probably where he runs the most. Yeah.
Ted White, who's like a legendary like stunt guy, movie.
I met him a couple of years ago. Yeah. I've met all the Jasons. And Ted was great. Ted's like a legendary stuntman. Like you said,
when I was looking at the IMDb though, there's another Jason in this movie. There's another actor that plays Jason in one scene.
Oh, probably in the flashback.
No, in the hitchhiker scene.
Oh, that's Tom Savini.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's the guy from Dusk Till Dawn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's amazing. That's awesome.
He was the guy, just not get too off track, he's the guy that Joe Castro, as a kid, former guest special effects master, he used to call Tom Savini using 1-800-BELL-ATLANTIC. He would call 401 in Philly, get Tom Savini's number, and Tom would talk to him over the phone, tell him how to build masks.
That's awesome.
Crazy.
That's awesome. But,
so yeah, so that whole, I love the whole beginning sequence. The morgue, seeing Jason like out of that element was so cool. And then here's where we got to talk. So we meet the Jarvises. We get Mrs. Jarvis, Tommy, and Trish.
Love
now, them. Why the hell do they live in the middle of the woods?
I not only in the middle of the woods, so close to Crystal Lake. So close.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's lovely.
Where's Mr. Jarvis?
I always assumed he died.
Well, no, they said they got divorced because Trish says when she's talking to that hitchhiker, she knew for 2 minutes and let him in the house.
Well, we have a lot of questions about that too. So
But anyway, she goes, "Yeah, my parents are separated, but I'm always hoping that they're going to get back together." But this is the one question. I know this might be in a little bit of a later scene, but the newspaper says that there's a mass murder, which happened close by.
Correct.
And why are they still going for jogs? And why are they leaving the house?
Because he's dead.
No, it said that he escapes.
Everyone thinks Jason's dead. Oh, from the morgue.
Yeah, the body's gone from the morgue.
Right. That's an updated newspaper.
Yeah, do they see that though? The family sees that?
Yeah, she's reading it. I hope she sees it.
Sometimes you skip the headlines, right?
How about the 1985 blanket behind her? The crocheted blanket. Everyone had that.
The Roseanne blanket?
Yes. Yeah, the Roseanne blanket.
You're right. I mean, like, why are they still there? Knowing all the... I mean, now this... So if he escaped now, this is the third time now that this killer's killed people. And they're still at the same house.
Not smart, Jarvises.
It's bad parenting in all these movies.
Yeah, that's true.
The second one, it's no one actually knows it's him. That's it. Doesn't like get out. It doesn't get out until this one. Who he is? They figure out who he is.
Ah, okay.
The second one, he slaughters everybody. There's a couple final people left, and it ends on like a cliffhanger. But it's supposed to be that he just like went back into the woods. Not, you know. So it's really not until this one.
So in the second one, they never caught the killer. They didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
And then the third one is still at the camp.
Yeah. It's not the camp. It's like this. It's like a bunch of people renting a house.
Okay, but it's still in the area. I mean, obviously you have a killer on the loose that you never caught and you're still gonna have people go visit that spot. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Horny teens.
Series, the timeline makes no sense because two is supposed to be five years after part one, and then we really don't know how much time has elapsed. We know
pause real quick.
Obviously we know four is right after three, but so this is really the first time that the greater world knows who Jason Voorhees is, or at least knows that like he is responsible, he's alive and he's responsible.
So this is the first time they connect it to the first. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's it. Now, like we mentioned before, we were talking about that we saw the Jarvises, and then now we meet the six kids for the first time, the team.
I don't think they have every single stereotype in that car. Single one. Yep. And McFly is the same character he plays in Back to the Future. He's McFly.
A little more eccentric. He's a little more reserved as McFly in this one. Or he looks a little cuckoo.
I would say he's typical nerdy, can't get a girlfriend type. George McFly is eccentric. He's a weirdo.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the opposite.
He's weird, but he has a bunch of friends.
Are they friends?
Yeah, but wait, all those friends, they all crap on each other. Like there is no loyalty in that group.
I mean, my friends crap on each other too, but it's really teddy bear that really lays into him.
And you know what? Out of all the characters, I hated him more than the other ones. I just didn't like his character.
Yeah, he's a dick, you know.
He's supposed to be the cool guy, and he's just so not cool.
He's the guy that thinks he's cool.
Right. And it just thinks he's
cool, which is, you know, which is how his arc plays out perfectly.
Oh, that I did like, though. His arc was the way it went is absolutely perfect.
And he's from The Last American Virgin. He's the guy with Diane Franklin.
Well, that's funny because he's the only one in this movie that didn't get any action.
That is true.
Shouts to Diane Franklin.
Shout out to Diane Franklin. And it was pretty cool because the two actors, Crispin Glover and Lawrence Monassoon, they like really gelled a lot on set. So all their dialogue was like improv. And then they actually kept like the dead fuck line because they filmed this one earlier. So that was like a running joke throughout when he does the fake computer. He's like,
"It says you're a dead fuck." "What? A dead fuck? A lousy lay."
Let me put in the old computer.
You know what? The girls in this movie should not be hanging out with these guys.
No.
I mean, they're all a bunch of losers. I mean, let's be honest. And these girls are pretty hot. I think, like, out of all the movies, I think this movie has the hottest girls.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's hot girls in the other ones, but I would say in a bunch.
Some real foxes in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then this is the first time in the series also that you see Jason Voorhees' mom's name. It says Pamela, which I feel like that was an homage to some producer's mom or wife or something. But how weird was that roadside little like cemetery?
Who else was buried with her? There were like five other crosses there.
I don't know.
I think it's just supposed to be that it's such a sparse area that it's probably like one of the few actual grave sites.
Yeah, but is it really sparse? Because it seemed like it was right in front of them as soon as they pulled over. I mean, it wasn't hidden well.
There's some expanded canon that Jason's father is buried there as well.
Ooh.
Was there ever talk of his father?
No, not anything official. Like there's stuff they were gonna put him in like a sequel at one point. There's mentions of him in like some comics and things, but nothing screen official.
You know, I'm surprised they never did like a prequel, like a story of Jason. You know, as a kid,
they've talked about it. There's been so many pitches over the years. So like it's insane how many like sequels and prequels haven't come to light. But there's definitely been talks over the years. I don't know what their plan is now. There's too many lawsuits going on.
Yeah, but I mean, like you have 10 movies. Like what? They have 10 movies, right?
There are 12 movies.
Okay. So yeah. 12 movies. You're gonna tell me you think space should come before a prequel of how Jason becomes Jason? Like, I mean, that's just like, I'm surprised that movie was never made, but they made Jason go into space.
Yeah. I would rather see, I'd like to see a movie with Jason's dad show up.
That's what I mean. Like his backstory.
It was going to be like, I think it was going to be like, you know, classic abusive father type kind of thing going on.
Nightmare on Elm Street did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then they drive back to the six kids. They see a hippie hitchhiker in the middle of nowhere.
Trying to get to Canada.
Yeah.
And it seems that she gets a lot of turndowns because her sign is ready to say F you.
That's awesome.
Right away. So she she's probably been there a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I love too? What I noticed on this watch, the reason... Not a single line in the film. She's all face acting. She's got the double-sided sign. She raises her middle finger. They didn't want to pay her for any
She squeezed
line.
The banana to
she
death.
She did not get her SAG card on this movie. I was like, I felt like she was pantomiming.
She was probably someone's mom someone like, you know, backed out for the hitchhiker role. And they needed someone. So like there was probably someone's mom on set.
She wasn't someone. She was the same age as the other actors.
Well, this is the 80s.
True. That's true.
And then she goes, "You know what? I just got blown off by these kids. Let me sit down and have a banana. Wait for the next car that might come." Because nobody's driving out there. And then what a way to go. Friggin', you're eating a banana and you got a knife in the back of your throat. The fact that she hears the footsteps and just like, and then doesn't like really turn around.
Yeah, she hears like a twig snap.
I have a Jason question here. So what's Jason's motivation? Like, you know, I understand it, the camp situation of killing people there, but what's his motivation for killing anybody?
Fucking.
Okay.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, man.
No, but I mean, okay, so the hitchhiker, like, why, like, what's that? Doesn't seem like his. Yes.
She's in the way. Gotta keep the body count going. He's gotta keep his cardio up.
Okay.
I mean, that's. He's allergic to bananas. Not a big fan of bananas.
All right. So far, what's this movie? Tell me in briefly, what's the plot of this movie? Because, you know, I mean, and I'm being serious about this. You know, you got the kids that's. They're renting a house for the summer, and then just Jason comes here and kill. Like, what's like the? I don't know what the plot was. Like, I don't understand. You know, what's the plot of this movie?
You nailed it.
Oh, that was it. Okay, all right, got it. Then.
Okay, now you know what it really is. He's escaped from the morgue, and he's making his way back to the camp. He wants to be at the camp. He wants to be in those woods, and I think that these people are just in his path,
just in his way.
Yeah, so he's like. He's marching back through the woods, and these people are in his path. I think that's really all it is. So, and it just so happens that this family lives there, and then essentially next door, whatever you want to call it, these kids are renting out that other house.
So it makes you think, why has he never bothered that house before?
Because he's always been like in the camp.
Oh, so he's been busy with the camp.
And the other spots he's been. Like in part three, that house it's like on the other side of the lake. So it's like part of the camp, but not really. So I think this is the furthest out he's gone.
I gotcha.
So it's really just, he's got one mission. It's to get home, and these people are there. So he's just going to kill them.
Well, you know, it shows you how good this movie is, because it is a very thin plot it's still a great movie.
Yeah.
Now I have another question then. So Jason is obviously some kind of monster or whatever. How does he know his way from the hospital to get back to the camp?
GPS.
I mean, he's walking the whole time. So he's not, you know, he's not. So, and basically he goes through woods.
Maybe he's following road signs. Like that's why he popped out where the hitchhiker was. He's like, all right, I got to find a road.
So you think he could read?
Oh, sure. He might be a little slow. I'm a homeschooled him.
Okay.
They cut out the scenes for time of him with a compass and a map.
Yeah. Well, that does get kind of offhand references in I think two or three, is that he does know his way. Like he's kind of become like an expert woodsman, but he's also a.
Yeah, but I can get that, you know, the surrounding area to the lake. That I can get that.
Yeah.
You're talking about from the hospital, which, you know. All the way back there. I mean, that's not an easy route.
Yeah.
I think we're thinking way too hard on it.
So then we get the kids, they go into the house that was actually just built for this movie. Like that house didn't exist. They built it because they loved the Jarvis house. They built the one where the kids were at. And dude, you get Judy Aronson, who I love. She's just awesome. And she plays Sam. And then her friend Sarah is basically like, are they friends? It seems like these were like a group of kids that like won a raffle and they go to school together, but they really don't know each other. It's the fact that she's like, you know, she's basically calling her a whore because you have a reputation.
No, I feel like they all were sneaky to each other, like snaky, and like they weren't good friends. So yeah, I think you almost got it. Like they won a raffle and they all got a free trip. And it's like the first time they're going together.
And Tommy gets the peep show of a lifetime when Sam and Paul, who that guy's like the luckiest guy ever that he got this role in this movie. Sam's like naked in the window. And dude, the way Feldman does that is so real and genuine. So
funny. I was going to say that's the way I think anybody at that age would have reacted. Like he nailed it. I mean, I wonder, and I wonder how much of that would have been improv from him. Like, you know, just like, you know, because I mean, he was natural. Yeah, it was so natural.
He wasn't actually seeing them.
Right.
So, you know, obviously they wouldn't let him see the other actors naked. So it was a lot of cuts back and forth. So I forget what they were telling. They were telling him something like, oh, you're seeing these kids have a lot of fun. You want to be there kind of thing. So it's like excited kid. But at the same time, there's like a little bit of that like adolescent titillation. And he's just nailing it, even though he doesn't really know what he's looking at.
Well, there was definitely titillation there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Titillation.
He really was on set for the skinny dipping scene. Because he talks about in the documentary how like happy he was.
Yeah, that was like the one time. Yep. Because they were like all there.
Don't forget, it's the 80s.
Yeah. Actually, I'm gonna roll back a little bit to the Jarvises real fast. I love this family unit. I truly think they feel like a family. And I think all three of them do an awesome job acting as mom, daughter, brother. Agreed. They nail every time I watch this movie. I'm like, I love this. I love this little unit, and I like the fact that they're not annoyed by the kids moving in next door. They must be used to like renters coming in. And well,
the fact that a mom knew that Corey Feldman was peeping and she was like, she was smiling about it. Like, he does it all the time.
Yeah. Little perv.
Close the blinds on him and he has like one eye open. And
no, but she has another trope though. How many times do women in the movies change or do something in front of a window like that? I've never seen
it. Why not? I do it.
You know, I yell at Nicole all the time. Can you please stop the window? The blinds are open.
This is in the 80s, Nicole. The cops will get called.
You guys think I'm kidding. The lights are on. The blinds are open. What are you doing?
So then we cut to the next morning. Like they're all walking in the woods, just going to Camp Blood. So they're walking to Crystal Lake. That's where they want to go. And they come upon the Double Mint Twins. Amazing.
Just happened to be riding a bike on that like rocky dirt trail. Right place,
where
right time.
Where did they live? Where were they coming from?
Chilling, you know, bike ride.
Well, they had to be close enough to where they could ride their bike back because they rode it to the house.
Yeah,
and the one sister was going to leave on her bike.
Yeah, they're probably just renting like another place or I don't know. What is that accent that they have? I've been watching this 25 years. I have no idea what because when they first roll up on the bikes, she sounds Australian, but then the other sister does not. And then the rest of the movie, they don't. So I'm like, was she trying stuff out? Was she improvising a little bit?
Maybe. Or
is it like a weird, like.
Maybe she studied abroad.
Abroad.
Abroad's abroad.
Yeah.
That'd be a good movie. That'd be like an 80s movie. Two hot twins go study in, I don't know, Romania.
By the way, when you were talking about how the girl made fun of her friend with a bad reputation, her friend also said that her reputation started in sixth grade.
Oh yeah,
so you know,
yeah, that reminded me of people I know. So
Sam was getting
sixth
there.
Grade.
So then, like
honestly, I know you were kind of like, you know, do these people like each other? But I've heard people that are genuinely friends have conversations like that.
Yeah, but I mean, but it further on when they're like one trying to hook up with one, but they walked away, the other one would steal them when they walked away. Like there really was no.
Yeah, that gets a little weird.
Yeah,
I think it's you only have so many people in the movie, so you kind of have to throw a little bit of conflict in.
Yeah,
and then the rest of like that banter of, oh, you know, you're saying I have a reputation or what? That's just exposition. That's exposition for us. That's just shoehorned in as like these two friends that have known each other forever but are talking like they just met last week.
Oh yeah, ridiculous. Now when they met the twins, why did the one girl leave to get the car?
And that made no sense.
Where was she gonna drive to? Yeah,
why trail?
And out of the blue she did it. Like they're all walking together. I'm gonna get the car. All right, where are you gonna bring it?
Yeah. And they must know, like I know the Jarvises have the newspaper, but they have to, the radio, something to know what went on. The fact that she's like, yeah, I'm going to go get the car.
And the way she did it, she was scared every step of the way.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the fact that she's going alone and then like there was a scene where she was literally walking backwards for a good like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Spooky.
Because she heard something.
And then right now, cut.
You're poking holes in one of my favorite movies. I don't appreciate this.
Hey, it's my job.
It's my job.
Well, wait till we get to this Tarzan swing.
Oh my gosh.
The worst swing I've ever seen in my life. It really was horrible.
It was probably just there and they used it.
They barely made the water on every swing.
Oh my god. And then skinny dip. So we get a skinny dip scene. The girls are getting naked.
Does it happen Does it happen that easy back then?
I hope. I wish. I dream.
I mean, it just seemed like, first of all, it seemed awkward.
But I'm not sharing them, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that just, you know, I but like so free. I'm not sharing them.
On occasion, yeah, it's that fast. On occasion.
Oh, okay.
Hey-o.
That's how Doug and you met, huh? That's okay.
On the Tarzan swing. He let me go first. But no, the fact that they're...
how I met my wife. That's how I met my wife.
And that is how I met your mother. So the fact that all of them right away get naked, and then Crispin, and the fact that he takes forever, like he's trudging into the water, like
he looked like he never undressed himself before, the way he was undressing.
So nervous.
Ridiculous.
And then you get Trish and Tommy and Gordon. They pull up to the lake, and Trish kind of sees what's going on. But I love Gordon. The dog was like, boobs. He flies out of the car.
Gordon is one of the funniest characters in this movie. What he does later, I'm amazed. We'll get there. I mean,
legendary dog actor, Gordon.
Ridiculous.
And it made no sense.
It made no sense at all.
Oh my god. So then they asked Trish to come in the water, I think, either because one of the characters, I don't know why it took so long to get to it, Doug, this guy named Doug in this movie doesn't have a lot of lines, but that's fine. But Doug in this movie, it's either him or Paul are like, come on, join us. Trish is like, no, it's okay, I guess I'm a little overdressed. So then they're leaving, driving, car breaks down, and Trish says to her 11-year-old brother, Tommy, can you fix it?
Well, she asked Tommy to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because she also asked him to fix the lights when they had a power outage. Now, how old is Corey Feldman in this movie?
11.
Maybe. 10.
So he's lifting the hood of the car, trying to fix this engine.
Well, I think that plays into his, like, you know, he builds all his monster stuff. He's supposed to be like a little like whiz kid. Like he knows. I know it's weird.
Those masks are ridiculous.
Amazing.
How he made those.
It's just, you know, latex and plaster of Paris.
Oh, that's it? Okay. I can barely make a mug out of clay when I took, you know, and this kid's making these masks that are like, look real as anything.
Yeah. Which stuff that Savini had laying around.
Well, you know, it also, I mean, as much as we love the family, the mom should be a little concerned that the kid's walking around with alien masks during the day while playing video games.
I love
it. You know, and then you go in his room and he's got all this creepy stuff. I mean, the mom should be a little concerned.
I mean, my mom wasn't concerned with me, and look how I turned out.
Did you walk around with alien masks all the time?
I don't know. I had all kinds of comic book and monster stuff from the time I was like 3.
Yeah, but comic books are different than walking around with an alien mask.
Okay, maybe I don't have an alien mask, but I had like I had horror stuff like my whole life.
It seemed like he lived in that.
I'm okay.
He is okay. I know. I love when he's playing the game, and the mom goes, "Tommy, turn that. Can you go take that upstairs?" And he just turns, and he's in that mask, and he's even wearing a hat on top of it.
The kid is definitely disturbed. I mean, you know. So I mean, the mom should have been more concerned. I'm just saying. Bad parroting.
So then we think it's a Jason that's peeping on Tommy, which, yeah, it's pretty. Again, we just saw the crackling of the sticks before and the death of the banana hitchhiker, and it's Rob.
Is Rob this where Jason gets the machete?
No,
he had a machete before.
I think he has one in 3.
Yeah, I don't think he gets it.
I thought he got it from here because I thought he got it because they had a machete in this movie.
Yeah, I think.
I guess that is used to make you think it's Jason because he had it in three. That's why in that scene you think it's
okay.
It might be Jason that like swings that, which that was kind of questionable that he did that later. But just the fact that he's explaining his story, he helps Corey Feldman again, 11-year-old kid. He's like, I think it's a solenoid. So he pulls a knife out. He says, start it. The car works.
Would that work, what he was doing with the knife?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, you're being serious?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Old cars like that, you could start with any, like, it used to be like you can do like anything. Now it's like all computers and stuff. But I remember my mom had a car that my dad used to like put a stick in this thing and like, it was ridiculous.
Just crank it.
I feel like this character could have been so much better. Like, I feel like they wanted something with him, but it didn't go the place it could have been. I just think he could have been like a cooler outsider, you know, like the, you know, but he was kind of lame, to be honest with you.
He's got like a solid backstory. He's there to find Jason. Jason murdered his sister.
But his sister was in the third one.
Yeah.
So he's already out that quick and knows that she's dead.
I thought she was in a second one.
No, it's in the third one because Joseph Zito, when he said fans told him about that, and he's like, oh, I guess we got that wrong. So it's a day later and he's already camping and hiking.
So he saw the headlines and he just booked it out there.
See, I thought he was going to be like that. Who was that? Was it Michael Myers? Who was the guy that the outsider was trying to get? Michael Myers, the actor. What's his name? I think it was Michael Myers, or maybe it was one of the Jason movies. He looked like Indiana Jones. He was a black guy. He had
That's Jason Goes to Hell, right?
Oh yes, it wasn't him. Yeah, was it? What's his name?
Steve Williams is his real name. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were going to have something like this. Like, this guy was going to be like that kind of thing where, you know what, he's got the backstory, he's got the, you know, the machete, and like, he's going to be like a big help in this search. And he really wasn't much of help at all.
Yeah.
No, he says later, though. Yeah. No, but the fact that he says he's hunting for bear, and then 1 second, she's like, well, you need a lift? In seconds, you have your 11-year-old brother, and you're going to let this stranger into your car.
And not only he's walking around with hiking equipment, why would he need a lift?
Exactly.
You know, so and the lift is to her house. Right? I mean, so where was he going?
He doesn't even know where he's going. He just started hours ago on this hike, on this fake bear hunting mission.
Yeah.
He thought about that backstory right away. He's like, my sister ever gets murdered at a camp and goes missing. I need hiking gear. Bear hunting is my backstory.
And then he immediately starts questioning her. Oh, you guys live out here? Are there any kids renting the house?
You know what? Yeah. That's what he said. So you have a guy here who has a machete, who you don't know, and you put him in a car, and then he's asking after the bear, he goes, are there any kids, local kids nearby?
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, you're not at that point, you don't get any concerned at all.
Stranger danger.
Yeah.
It really was.
I'd been like, get out or tell Tommy to run. And then we cut back to the skinny dipping, and this is when Sam is trying to get Sarah to take her top off and go skinny dipping.
I liked Sarah.
Yeah,
she was my favorite.
She was, wow, over Judy Aronson. Wow,
I think so. I like Sarah.
So when Sam is like, come on, well, I'm gonna go underwater until
her panic, like she was really concerned that she's drowning. Like, it's, she just said, I'm going underwater until you come out, and she looked like, oh my god, where are you? Where, like, she was so concerned about that. I was a little annoyed by that. How could she fall for that trap?
It was another excuse to get Judy. Judy Aronson's naked most of this movie. Yeah, really, if you think about it, that scene, you have her death scene, you have her in the window.
Yep.
She's only in five scenes. She's naked over half the time.
Well, they had to save on the budget. So, you know, she was probably the last one signed on. So she just had no clothes. We could have you in the movie, but unfortunately, the budget call, you're not going to be able to wear clothes.
That's great. So then we get to the party.
Was that a party?
I have no idea.
I mean, I've seen a lot of 80s movies, and they do a lot. They do much better partying than this.
It's not a party. It's hey, it's nighttime. Let's hang out. Let's hang out and dance and drink. And
do you think this was improv?
Oh, I hope so.
If this is not McFly,
what is that? And what's she doing?
They're doing Katu completely.
She's doing her best.
She's doing typical 80s dance.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like moshing.
No, I think the cocaine just kicked in.
Do you think like they're listening to two different music? Like he's got like heavy metal on and she's got like, you know, like Wham on.
Well, there's probably nothing. There's probably nothing playing.
So you think that's how he normally dances?
Yeah, they probably think of something because you're not going to play anything on set because that'll interrupt the sound.
No.
So they're just miming.
So that's what he normally dances like.
Yeah.
I always feel like they did a good job. If that music's not actually being played on set, I always feel like it sounds integrated in. Whereas a lot of times I feel like dance scenes and stuff, it always feels disconnected.
Yeah.
So I always thought that he just played it on set.
That's what I thought, because I mean, you have two different styles right now. You have her again, slower, you know, and he's going crazy. Like then definitely clearly not listening to the same music.
And then we get at the same party, we get the creepy Teddy when he's sitting over the girl he's known for. Maybe it's at night now, so they obviously could have been hanging out for a while. He does want to give Teddy Bear a kiss, and he's holding this teddy bear. He says that line, I think, five times.
I was going to say he says the line five times, and it didn't work all five times.
Well, the first time it sort of worked because he forcefully grabbed her by the back of the neck and kissed her.
Yeah, but again, he forcibly did it. So I'm not sure. Yeah. So and at the end, he was the only guy left because there was a look of disgust on her face when she looked around and he was the last one left. You know, so again, I don't think it really works. So I would say, like, you know, that line that he used, he's got to come up with something else.
Yeah. And then his twin that he forced himself on leaves, starts hitting on Paul, who's with Judy Harrison, Sam. And then it turns into a slow dance party. She's wearing Paul's hat. And you're just like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
Everybody's with everybody else.
As I said, there was no loyalty whatsoever. There was
like a swingers party.
It really, without swinging. It was a swingers party without swinging.
Musical chairs.
Yes.
Just trade off.
And then cut back to the Jarvis house across the street. Rob the bear hunter is in the house. Mrs. Jarvis is totally fine with the stranger in there in her son's room.
Wait, so he barely was in there for 2 seconds when he's holding Tommy's hand and Tommy says, come here, come upstairs. I want to show you something.
Yeah.
And the mom just, you know, like letting it just go, like not a concern whatsoever.
Tommy's line of, come on, I want to show you something in my bedroom.
In my bedroom. Right.
Has irked me. For many years. And I wish they had just left the word bedroom out of it. If they had just said, hey, I want to show you something. Hey, come look at this neat stuff I've got. Something.
Look at my masks. You know,
yeah, something. Yeah, something. Because we've already established that he like builds stuff.
And he's holding his hand, walking up to his bedroom.
Yeah. Yep. Just waving.
Unreal. That's so ridiculous. And it would be funny if the mom's like, oh, who's that guy? Oh, some bear hunter. Oh, yeah. Where'd you meet him? He helped us with the car. And then he was asking me about if there's any local kids around. Normal stuff, right?
Or she could have said, like, oh, who is that guy? He goes, oh, it's a bear hunter. Oh, Tommy's always bringing these guys home.
And then, so then after this part, Rob leaves. Trish is going outside with him. And she goes, you know, if it gets really bad out there, you can come back whenever you want and shower. I'm like, dude, you've known this guy for 5 minutes and you're opening the door?
Not only shower, she says, the door's unlocked.
Oh, she goes, Tommy always leaves the door unlocked.
Yeah, yeah. So, and if you want to shower, like of all things, if you ever want to shower, come here. The door's unlocked. They're very trusting her. People.
But then Rob kisses her very weird. He goes, like a little peck. He like, I'm like, whoa, 5 minutes. He's probably like, you know what? She's offering me the house. So yep. A kiss on the cheek, that's got to be standard or something. And then the next scene bothers me so much, too, because you get the twins that are shotgunning beers in the worst possible way.
Wait, wait, wait. Was that a shotgun?
Well, it's an attempt.
Basically, it wasn't even close to their mouth. They were spraying it all over each other.
I know, but it was weird. The hitting the bottom of the can and then just...
And soaking yourself. Like, I mean, like it was almost more like who can wear more beer. It wasn't even like who could swallow more, who can wear more beer. That's what it was. Ridiculous.
They must have smelled so bad.
How many takes do you think that took? Like they had to dry off with a towel, do it again, you know.
Oh. Honestly, they might have just done it in one. If they got it, you know, this is a low budget flick. They might have just done it in one and moved along.
I would hope they did one because if they did a other, I would, if they left that as how bad that shotgun was, it has to be one because wouldn't they be like, all right, well, that's nowhere near a shotgun. Maybe they have like some frat bro on set. He's like, bro, twins, you got to put a little closer.
I was thinking that like, I wonder if they said, you know, all right, we're going to have you guys shotgun here. And they're like, do you know what a shotgun is? Oh yeah. Yeah. We know what it is. And then the next thing they do that. And they're like, you know what? Screw it. Let's just leave it in there. You know?
Yeah. This party gone.
So Paul is blowing off Sam for the one twin. She's even wearing his hat. So then Sam's like, whatever. I'm going to go. Wait,
so is Paul dating Sam?
I would think so. They had the room together.
Like they are together the whole time.
Yeah. He's hanging out with the other girl.
Yeah.
In front of Sam.
Yep. Yeah.
And she seems to be mad, but she doesn't seem to be mad.
I know. Maybe it was a raffle.
Honestly, they both suck.
Well, again, it's the 80s.
Paul and Sam. So she's annoying. He's a dick. Break up.
This really might be a swingers party.
Because she's like pissy the whole movie, it feels like. And then he's completely in the wrong. He's flirting with the twin.
Right in front of her.
In front of his girlfriend. Yeah, like clearly, like, hey.
Maybe he's trying to break up with her.
Maybe.
But then again, he felt guilty and he went after her later on. So
he did. But the fact that she goes, you know what? I'm going to blow off some steam. What do I do to blow off steam usually? I usually walk towards a foggy lake.
The creepiest lake possible.
Yes.
Middle of the night.
Pitch black with no clothes on.
And then not even just that, let me swim to a yellow raft all by itself. That looks like
it's randomly in the middle of the ocean or in a lake. And, you know, like I understand the no clothes if you're, you know, if it's sunny out, you know, maybe that's why they're doing it. But in the middle of night, that makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense
at all.
The 80s, baby.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing is that maybe she didn't bring a swimsuit and she doesn't want to get her clothes wet.
Okay. I mean, that's possible. But she did say, I'm going. Out to the lake, going out, you know, so she knew where she was going, so you know, blame her.
But the fact that how about every noise she assumed it was Paul?
Yeah,
every noise.
That's the trope. It's always Paul, you're being an asshole. I'm gonna go swimming. It's always I know it's you, and it's never them. It's never them. Never them. It's always their impending doom, or it's like a cat or something.
Well, you know, and Doug, you mentioned that. How gross is that? You have this raft that it's probably not even theirs, and you're laying naked in it. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's a pretty nice raft. It probably comes with
it. It's a nice raft.
But yeah, yeah, no, I wouldn't want to be like just flopping in there naked. And, like, I'm sure there's like dead leaves and shit, you know, like.
Well, when she first goes in a lake, you see a lot of algae and everything. You know, I don't like to go to, I don't like to go in a lake during the day because I don't know what's crawling in there. And she's going in the middle of the night.
The inky black depths of the lake.
And what the music in this scene, like the soundtrack for this movie is awesome. But just the fact that her last words are,
Screw you, Paul.
And then just Jason flies up. And that scene's so cool. Just seeing that knife come through underneath. And you see it wiggle on the back. Like they cut the full one that like goes like, yeah. Shows a lot of it. But even just that little bit looks so good.
He does a lot of cutting in this movie.
Yeah.
Like not just stabbing. He stabs and then cuts in a lot of this movie.
A lot of dragging on that.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah.
I love the shot of him coming out of the water, but it's so quick. And I'm sure it had to do with like censoring the stabbing. I wish there was a more of a hero shot of him coming out of the water. Like we get in other movies. Cause it's so quick. Like when I was watching last night, I was like, oh, this is the good one to snap for the Instagram. And then it's over. It's like up and it's over and it cuts away. And I'm like, well, that was too fast.
Well, you know, it was also dark. So it was so quick and dark that I agree. You couldn't appreciate it 100%.
Yeah. I do love the quick action of it though.
Oh yeah, dude. I love that. I love that kill. All the kills really through the whole movie. And we get a bunch of amazing ones coming up. But so then we get Paul. He's back in there. He kind of feels bad. He notices Sam's gone. So then he leaves. And then these twins just want to hook up with people because Jim right away steals Ted's girl, who was the one that with Paul. And the other twin looks so sad. And then she has to sit next to Ted. Like Jamie said, like later when they put on the smut film, she looks depressed. But even here, she looks so deflated.
She looks disgusted, though. She looks disgusted that this is the last, like, this is my only option I have here.
She thought she was going to get some. She gets traded off to Teddy Bear.
Ugh, and he used that line again.
Again, yep. And he's still holding the teddy bear the whole time.
You know what? He's one of those characters that's always, like, I've always, you know, 100% understood why he's annoying. But as I get older, he gets more annoying. But I still kind of love him because he's like a lovable idiot. Like he's that friend that he's like annoying, but like when you see him, like, you know, you're going to have a good time. So you just tolerate.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. We all have those.
You tolerate them
in
bits and pieces.
I don't know.
Like they're fun in like bits and pieces. You just can't do it all the time kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep. You invite them to your house every other gathering.
So then we get Paul. He finally gets to the water looking for Sam. He sees her and he's like, oh, Sam, sees that she's dead. And I gotta tell you, I love so many kills in the whole series, but this is a really underrated one that I forgot how awesome it looks. Like there's just this way he hits him with the spear gun and lifts him up and you see him pull the trigger
in the crotch.
Yeah.
That was pretty evil. I mean, Jason's done some kills, but that one, man, like he could have shot him anywhere. Why'd he shoot him in the groin?
For even thinking about cheating on his girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know what?
Dick.
So he was mad at, you know, the fact that he's a woman. So he doesn't like womanizers.
He doesn't like anything related to any sort of sexual conduct.
Because not only did he shoot him there, but he lifted him from the groin.
It's great.
With it. So like double the pain. Are you kidding me?
It's so good.
Ouch.
So then we cut to the Rob the bear hunter because he hears a sound. He hears maybe Paul screaming. I'm guessing it must have been that. Some kind of like yelp. Because then he's walking around with his machete. And then so this is something that they didn't even give us like. I guess there were sort of sounds that you heard, but when he gets it back to his tent and he knows his gun's broken. So Jason did that. He killed Paul and then broke it that fast. Or was Rob gone that long? Or
why would he break the guns?
I think he's supposed to have come across Rob's tent before killing
both of them. Okay.
Yeah. But that's kind of outside of Jason's realm. Also, he's going to go to the tent and break guns. Like,
At this point in the series, because he's set like traps for people. Like he's still human at this point, so he's got more of that.
He's human.
He's not a zombie yet. He's not a zombie.
Not a zombie yet. Yeah, he's deformed.
Well, all right. It's more than deformed.
He's deformed, and he's supposed to have like some sort of mental issues. But yeah, no, he's still human at this point. Yeah, right, no, this tracks. This tracks for this all point. Right.
Listen, who's to argue with the horror expert? You know, you win.
Not I. So then we cut back to Jim. Crispin Glover, he's hooking up with the twin. Good for him that this guy that was like so nervous. He was talking about this, what Ted was calling a fake girlfriend, Betty.
He's so awkward.
Yeah.
He really is.
So sad. He just got laid.
It is sad because he even asked afterwards. He asked her, like, pretty much, how was I? Was I dead? Like,
was I a dead fuck?
Yeah. How do you say that? Like,
she seems content to me. She looks all right. I think he took care of business.
And then at the same time, Ted is like just reaching around on top and he finds like a smut film from like the 40s. An old reel to reel.
Wait, was that smut? Like what was that? It was like vintage,
it's like old stag film.
Stag film. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Just like nude women from
90s. And he was loving it. Like he was having a blast. Well, he was also high as hell.
Yeah, you know. I mean, shit like that is funny. And when, you know, you mix a little drug into it.
He was having a blast.
Yeah,
he was.
I mean, he's laughing a little too hard, I think, but I'm there with him. I get it.
So there was no blackout at that house? Only the other house?
Well, the blackout didn't happen yet, right?
No, I know, but I'm saying, was there a blackout in both houses?
Yeah, when they go back to the house later, isn't everything off?
Was it the rental house loses power in the storm, and then the Jarvis house, Jason actually like rips the breaker off the wall or something.
Yeah.
I know he rips it, but I think the other house because of the storm.
Yeah, but later on when they go to the house, the projector's still on.
That's true. Makes no sense. Fuck.
You're poking holes in this, Jamie.
Damn it. Maybe it's battery powered. On the generator.
How else are you gonna watch the vintage films?
Yeah.
You gotta have backup.
Isn't it funny? It's almost like they forgot about Doug and Sarah for a while because they're just sitting on a couch in the back, like watching Ted watch this smut film. And Sarah, who's a virgin, obviously, she is like getting her going because she goes to Doug, like,
I've never seen anything like
that. She never has.
What, you didn't think that was hot?
She's got, well, it's Doug, right? That she's with.
Yes, yeah. Doug. Yeah.
Yeah. Our he's like knockoff Rob Lowe over
sort
here.
Sort of.
Yes.
He looks like Rob Lowe and Jared Leto smashed.
Had a baby.
Smashed yeah.
together.
It kind of looks like the guy from Stranger Things.
Oh, sort of. Yeah, sort of.
What's his name?
Crazy guy.
Crazy guy. You're talking about.
The one that was like the tough guy in the second season, huh?
The guy that works at the Dairy Queen.
Yeah, the brother of the redhead.
Oh, I knew you're talking about.
Okay, yeah.
There's like three people in that show that look exactly the same. Really, when I just thought about that show, there's like three people that look similar. So then, at this very same time, the other twin who doesn't want to be with Ted, she's disgusted, sitting next to him, goes upstairs and goes to her sister. And says, hey, you know, we should go now. She's like, you go alone. And it's like, ouch, it must be so far.
But how selfish. I mean, just because she wasn't hooking up, she had to ruin her other sister's time.
Not cool.
Not cool at all. And then the other sister saying, all right, go ahead in the middle of the night on your bike.
In the pouring rain, right?
In the pouring rain.
You just sleep on the couch. Just
right. You know. Well, you've always seen like that one friend, usually the girl, when the girls are together and you have that one friend that's not hooking up on everybody, who's ugly, who just gets annoyed, like, everybody come out, let's go now, and no one wants to leave.
Time to go.
It's always you know that girl. Everybody knows that girl in that one group.
Yep.
And this kill scene, which we'll talk about it now, but then I have a little cut together of both of them. But this one I always thought was so creative, just seeing her leaving and going to grab her bike, and then you see the lightning, the shadow, and then you see Jason with a pole. Is that all it is? It's like a pole. Shoves it into her stomach, and then they cut back inside to the smut film, and you're like, all right, that's over. And then they just show the side of the wall on the outside, and then you see the body just get thrown into it. I love that. Yeah. Creative.
What's good about that too is, like, you know what's happening. It's a cool shot, yeah, and it appeases the sensors because there's no blood or anything.
Exactly. So
you see the shadow.
Well, I like how Jason likes to use different weapons on everybody. Like, he doesn't like to use the same weapon twice. You know, he likes to get creative.
Yeah.
You know, so after he uses one thing, he's like, all right, let's try. Look, what else can I use for the next one? Like, he's just, you know, he's very creative.
He switches it up, man. Yeah.
He does.
Yellow.
That's what makes him different than Michael Myers.
Yeah, I love Jason. So then at the Jarvis house, this is the thing that I don't even get, because we don't even like see why, like, Trish and Tommy leave. So Mrs. Jarvis gets home and the power's out. No one's answering her. Even Gordon's not answering. And then she walks outside. We hear ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. She turns and gasps.
That's it.
And where does she go?
They don't show the kill at all. They don't show her anything.
Nothing. No body?
Nothing. Nothing.
I don't get that, because he could have usually plants the bodies. He usually puts the bodies in places, and you'd think maybe that would have one that had been in, like, Tommy's room or something.
Her face was like, you know, like in Clue when, like, you see who the killer is. Yeah. Like, her face is like, oh, it's you. And then, like, you know, that she's there.
Yes, exactly.
But yes, I'm surprised they didn't show. I mean, they've showed all the other kills, so I'm surprised, you know, unless maybe she didn't meet with Jason. Maybe someone else that she was surprised to see.
Rob the Bear.
Gordon.
Gordon. Are you positing that there's another killer in this movie?
Or maybe it's her ex-husband. Maybe he's a cuckoo.
And that's why she was surprised. And then they ran off and left the kids.
Wow.
Oh, she wasn't surprised in the fact of, like, you're going to kill me. She's like, oh my God, I've been waiting for you to get rid of it so I can leave these damn kids.
Maybe he was in prison. And she was surprised to see him there.
He broke out. Prison break. I love
Mrs. Jarvis, man. It always bums me out that she gets it.
Well, we don't know. We never saw a body.
We never saw a body.
So it's open for discussion.
Fact that Tommy and Trish, they were out looking for her. So, like, I don't understand. She was supposed to be jogging in the storm?
Well, when they came home, they realized that mom wasn't there, but she said, like, oh, she's been gone for hours or something like that. How did she know that? So they just got home. So how did she know how long the mom was actually out for?
Or why she was out, or what was the reason? Because Tommy even says, like, oh, maybe she's jogging. What?
Middle of night? Why? You don't do that?
With a killer on the loose, on the newspaper, on her Roseanne blanket couch? No way. And then Trish, she goes, let me go figure this out. How does she know where Rob's tent is? Unless he did it right near their house.
He did it in the backyard.
Did you imagine that?
She did drive him to their house because he said you need a lift. So maybe that's where he was going all this long.
Could you imagine that? Like, she's like, oh, we got space in the house. You could stay here. He's like, I'm okay. Pitches a tent in the fucking backyard.
Yeah, but he's probably saying, listen, I've been carrying this tent around with me all this time. I gotta use it.
Yeah. Holy but, shit.
So it's almost like he knew Jason was gonna be there.
Yeah. He's got a sixth sense about these things.
But maybe he's something with Jason. Maybe he's in on it with him.
Well, I don't know about that. That'd have been the way that relationship would have ended. It would have been
Jason had no use from that anymore. But I mean, how does he always at the same spot that Jason is always?
Yeah, I don't. The thing that is very confusing is the fact that he would think Jason, again, he doesn't really know Jason. Like, really, he just knows that Jason killed his sister at the camp 2 days ago. That really, that's what happens. Or 3 days ago. But the fact that he hears somebody in his tent, he goes, you know, let me slash a machete into it, but barely into it.
Again, Jason would have done the same thing. Jason has a machete. He's got a machete. He's slashing like a maniac. Jason slashes like a maniac. I'm just saying there might be something more to it.
I know it's there's some leaps in logic, but when you look at the previous two sequels as well, like Jason's an urban legend, and it's now this point that most people realize it's true. So maybe he's coming at it from, there's been all these stories about this killer. It's always been kind of like wishy-washy, even though there's been some deaths over the years. Now we know it's a physical it's a person. Maybe he's putting together kind of like what he knows from these urban legends, what he knows from the news. And that's why he's just like, well, I'm just going to base everything I do on this. Like, he's going to be near teenagers. He's going to be near the lake. He's, you know, so I know it's a little iffy, you know, in terms of movie making, but it kind of makes sense.
I don't know. I think that Jason doesn't want his cover to be blown. So he's in cahoots with the bear hunter and say, listen, if we could pretend we have two killers, they're not going to put all the focus on me.
Oh. And just the anger he has when he goes, what the hell are you doing here? It's like, dude, she was going to give you like a hot shower.
Why would he slash his own tent?
And not hit the person that's inside. Why would you?
Yeah. Did he think Jason was in there?
Oh, I hope so.
Okay. So what would Jason be doing in there? Sleeping? Like, you thought Jason was just barring his tent?
Rummaging.
Eating his trail mix. So then we cut back to Jimmy and the twin. Egan mentioned before that we were talking about the dead fuck, and she was like, you're incredible, you want to go for round two? So Jimmy goes, I'm gonna go downstairs, and he steals her panties and he gives them to Ted, and he goes, why don't you run this in your computer? That's a great line.
That was great. That was very funny. But you know what though, at that point Teddy did not care. He was still into this vintage movie that he just didn't. He kept laughing, so he could care less. And I think this is where the movie turns. Now this movie goes apeshit.
Now I will say, dude, I will say one thing before we get apeshit. Jimmy is fully in the right to kind of rub it in.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Public service announcement: don't take the girl's panties and give it to your roadie friend. She needs those back to go home.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a creep factor for doing that. But I don't at the same time, I don't blame him, because he needed some satisfaction with Teddy.
Yeah. Also, if I had a dollar for every time I've yelled from another room, hey, Teddy, where's the corkscrew? I'd have a few bucks to my name.
Nice. But the fact that he how far away is that kitchen? Not that far.
Like, it's right there. It's like this door behind, this closet door behind me.
He's Teddy, stone. And
Jimmy's in the kitchen right there.
He's been staring at a vintage video probably for about an hour. So, I mean,
screw.
And it's right. And then Jason's like helping him out, puts it right through his hand.
Okay. So he's in the kitchen. How big is this kitchen?
That is
pretty small.
Okay. Where is Jason that he doesn't see him in this small kitchen?
I'm behind a lamp or like in the curtain. He has the curtain over him.
I was assumed it was one of those like little like L-shaped kitchens at like little beach houses or cabins. So Jimmy comes in from the living room entrance, and I think Jason comes from the other entrance, and it's dark in there, and he just...
Jason's a pretty big guy. It's hard to hide him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, he should have seen him at some point.
The magic of movies, baby.
But again, so quick, like the Judy Anderson kill. It's the corkscrew, the scream, he turns, and the butcher's knife right to his face.
See, I feel like he does a lot of torture first, and then the kill in this movie. You know, a lot of times that corkscrew would have went right into his neck. Instead, he slams it in his hand and then goes for the kill.
Yeah.
Well, Jason is angry.
I was going to say that. He's definitely angry in this movie.
His mama was killed. These dirty, rotten teenagers are still partying. He keeps killing them, but they keep partying.
They'll never learn, those kids. So then we get, so he's gone, Crispin's dead, and then we get the second twin. And now this scene, just for, I wanted to show both of them so we could talk about the second one, but this is the first twins kill that we discussed before. And I just love this. When they cut back to the inside, Teddy's stoned off his ass, laughing. You see old 40s boobs, and then boom. And then the one that happens right now is the other twin. Hey, let me just keep staring out this window because I see my sister's bike. Where could she be? I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, that. What is he standing on?
Oh, there's a little
little roof, right?
There. It's like a little alcove. That's great. I love when the windows blow out. But yeah, no, he's standing on like a little the house like butts out on the first floor there.
Oh, so he climbed it on the outside. He climbed onto that thing.
Yeah.
For that kill.
And then just absolutely explodes through a window and grabs her.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of going through windows in this movie.
I mean, that's his signature move. He does.
There's about four of them. There's about four going through the windows, or three or four. Yeah.
The window budget out of the 2.2 million, the window budget was probably like a million. They were just blowing through windows over and over. Yeah, a lot of sugar glass. Holy shit. And then we get the whole thing we talked about earlier with the exposition and Rob talking about his sister that died. We mentioned that earlier. And then this is the Teddy. Teddy's all alone. Doug and Sarah went upstairs. And this is a pretty cool scene.
Getting a hot shower.
Him just, Teddy all by himself. And he goes, you know what? Let me get really close to the screen. And he goes, you want to give Teddy Bear a kiss? And then.
He's such a creep.
Yeah.
He's such a creep.
But the way he went was, it was cool because the footage, again, Jason's quick. Because how did he cut the footage? Teddy turns, and somehow Jason ran all the way behind. Is he tiptoeing, running like a Scooby-Doo?
He does a lot of like in and out of the house and like moving around pretty, you know, he's pretty agile in this movie.
And this kill's great.
If the camera panned back, it would be very, very like Marx Brothers. Yeah. One door, you know, just circling around, murder this person outside, come through, murder this guy inside.
You're right.
I love the axe in the back of the head, and you see the blood rip through the screen in the back. All of them are great. Tom Savini did a great job in this movie. Each and every one is just top notch.
Yep.
And then Egan was excited about the shower scene with Sarah and Doug because they just banged, and Doug was like, I'm in heaven. He was in heaven, and he goes, I'm going to keep showering. You get out of here. And then,
okay. And again, and I think I've said this before on other podcasts. The girls in these movies are able to tie these towels on so tight that they never move.
No.
They can run. They can fall. They can do it. And it stays in place every time. I could barely walk from one room to the other without it, you know, like hanging off. they can do aerobics and it still stay on.
Special movie towels.
It really is.
What is his line? He says, I'm in heaven, right?
Yeah, he says, I'm in heaven. And then
she says,
I'm in love.
Love.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, what? He catches what? She's like, nothing. I didn't say nothing.
And how about Doug's shower death? Him and Paulie, I guess, are boys on the, I don't know, baseball team, football team. And he's like, hey, Paulie, I dropped the bar of soap. Yeah. Paulie? And then his kill is so cool too. Just seeing Jason like smash through and just, you see that it switched like, to like a fake head and just bending in,
squeezing his head. Like he's
crushes his face in.
Yeah.
I love it. It's, that is classic Savini just going hard on the effects.
That's awesome.
And then again, like you said earlier, Jason making people, he was probably already dead then. But Jason did that, and it was maybe something they cut or didn't even shoot. But the fact that he pulled him through and he's just sitting on glass on the shower door when Sarah walks in. And I think her death is the only one that was legit.
Simple. It was a simple.
It was very simple. Yeah.
Yes.
But just how it perfectly went through the door.
Yeah.
and it stayed like, right? Wasn't it still
right in her chest? Yeah. Right. In the hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The door was locked and she's like, ah, and then boom.
Yeah.
Right through the door.
And she fell down and a towel stayed on.
That is pretty funny that the towel stayed on.
Every movie. Tell me it. Every movie, the girl is always running around a towel and never moves.
It's glued on.
Glued on towels. So meanwhile, this whole time, Trish left Tommy by himself. So Trish and Rob get back to Tommy, who's been alone this whole time with this killer on loose, immediately leaves him alone again to go check on the kids across the way. Within seconds, just bails on him one more time.
Well, I mean, not for nothing, he seems like the most sensible one out of all these people.
That is
like, he seems to be able to, the smartest one easily, you know, and just, yeah. So, I mean, I'm not surprised. He's okay by himself.
And Jason is pretty quick cleaning everything up because when they get back to the house, everything's spotless.
He's sweeping really. In there. He's cleaning windows.
He has enough time to clean up and prop up the people.
Yeah. And it just so happens that Rob and Trish don't use those entrances. So they aren't alarmed right away. Like they don't use the back door.
Where no, and there's no blood. There's no blood anywhere. Like no traces of blood whatsoever.
That'd have been a great commercial in the 80s, like for some cleaning product. Just have Jason as the cleaner.
Jason trusts Pine Sol.
Yeah.
And he's holding the bottle of Pine Sol at the end of his commercial. Like
it's just breathing heavy.
Oh shit.
That word from our sponsor.
And the only other person that went with them was Gordon, because Rob goes into the bay. He goes, I'm going downstairs, which why would he think Jason's downstairs? And he goes, stay with Gordon. And then this is the part with Jamie when Gordon, for some reason, gets. Yeah,
he gets spooked. Okay. He gets spooked. When I saw this, I wasn't sure what was going on. Like, I thought maybe he got thrown out the window or something. Like I didn't, but no, Gordon got spooked and jumps out the window.
Yep.
And you never see him again. But like the fact that he was smart enough to run away and go through the window. I did not know. I thought he got thrown through the window at first. The most ridiculous thing. I'm sorry. I love the movie. So ridiculous.
It would have made sense, I guess, if Jason was upstairs and that made him spook. But Jason's in the basement this whole time. So what is he spooked of?
Maybe he saw a mouse.
I just know. And you know what? That was just the producers going, hey, we're not going to kill the dog, so let's get him out of the movie with 10 minutes to spare.
But the way that the dog escapes like a human, like going through the window, I don't think a dog would ever do that, first of all. But like, it's just so ridiculous. And I was trying to find the picture of it, and there was no clear copy, but unbelievable.
It would have been great if he was like, if he was just getting ready to jump, and they're like, shit, keep rolling. I don't know what he's doing.
What they should have done is when like Jason like bursts through the front door later on, just have a quick shot of the dog scurrying through, like from one room like out the front door, and then that's it.
Or have the dog like land on him when he jumps out.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like while Jason, and then run off.
Yeah.
And amazing.
And meanwhile, this whole time, right after that, Trish goes to the shower. She sees the blood, so Jason didn't have a chance to clean up upstairs. And then Doug's not there, but then she turns and he's stuck to the wall with like a knife in his back. And dude, this whole thing, the fact that Rob comes back upstairs for like a half a second and he goes, I think he's down here. And then I'm like, if he was down there, wouldn't he have already saw you or you would have saw him? He goes back down and then Jason is down there and they just start going at it. And he pulls out a hammer and I'm like, what?
Wait, are they going at it? Or is Rob just saying, he's killing me. He's killing me.
Yeah.
The whole time. Yeah. First of all, do people say that? Like if they're getting killed, you know, are they going to say I'm he's killing me?
Yeah. I don't think they would play by play their own death.
That's what it sounded like.
When you think about that, it's a very upsetting idea, but in the hands of this actor, it just comes off as insane.
Oh, in a different setting, it's extremely depressing, you know, but the way he does it,
he's killing me.
Don't come down. He's killing me.
He's killing me.
And just the hammer, and he's just freaking, ah.
So again, what did this guy do the whole movie? Like nothing.
He lurks.
That's it. I mean, he really like they set him up to be this cool character who could maybe battle Jason, and he really does nothing the whole movie.
No.
In fact, I think he has like the wimpiest death because he's like crying.
I mean, I guess that's the point, you know. You as the viewer, you're like, okay, this is the last movie. This guy's gonna kill Jason, right? And he just gets taken out immediately, and Jason gets a different ending.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And why would Trish, after seeing this man get demolished with a hammer, why would she think, let me go check on him? And again, Jason's gone already that quick that she doesn't even see him.
Well, she runs out and then runs back, then walks back in.
Yes.
So she ran out when he was getting, she ran out when he said run, but then she didn't know Jason was gone.
No.
And she walks slowly back in.
Halfway down and then turns. And then Jason tries to rip her through the stairs. And then this is where she starts running out and Jason set up the whole bunch of bodies. Cause she sees Crispin Glover's body and like, kind of like goes past it. And I do love when Jason leaves and he like smashes through the body. I love that. Like it's a rips door. Yeah. That's great. And Trish gets back home. She immediately like goes to Tommy, like, give me these tiny nails. You just saw this guy rip through stairs. You think like these little tiny tacky nails are going to close the door.
Well, and I mean, listen, she's not the brightest when it comes to Jason, because even when she's trying to block the door, she only blocks half the door upstairs. So she really wasn't the smartest.
But it's pretty epic when Jason brings Rob's dead body with the hammer still on his neck and throws him through the window. That was cool because obviously that's how she gets the hammer, because she's pretty badass with that. Like, right in the next part, but just seeing a human body get thrown, that was, oh my God.
And
how much power he has.
I was going to say, the way he was thrown, it wasn't like, you know, like he threw the body
far,
you know, like through. Yeah. Yeah. With power.
Yeah. And then she starts hitting him with the hammer when he grabs Tommy through the window. And then Jason, he has in his neck and he's like wounded for a second. Then he takes it out and then he throws it. It reminded me of like American Ninja when he takes the hammer out and throws it and it just goes right next to her head.
He misses her a few times when he throws things, you know? So, yeah, I mean, he might be exhausted though. I mean, he has killed a lot of people and I'm sure like hanging people up, hammering, you know, them, everything. It's tiring.
I mean, he's also got really poor depth perception because he's got that wonky eye.
Yes, that's
who,
true.
Who knows? Who knows how he's?
That is true.
He probably needs a nap too.
9 times out of 10, it's just.
Oh, that's why he was probably in the tent earlier. He was napping in the tent. You know.
Oh yeah, he's resting his good eye.
Like Jamie said, when they go to block the door in Tommy's room, and they only block half of it. Like of course we know that he's going to get in, but he just starts beating in the door. And then he's like trying to get all the way through. And then she grabs Tommy. How much do you think that thing was in 1984? That console, that computer, she smashes it on Jason's head.
Okay. So the power's out.
That's a pricey item.
The power's out. How would that show sparks and electricity? The power is out in that house.
That is true.
You're killing me. He's killing me. He's killing me.
I'm just saying. And it looked like it wasn't even plugged in the way she threw it. So one, it wasn't plugged in. Two, there's no power. But yet millions of sparks and it, like a little explosion on his face happened.
Yeah. That is wild. But I always love this like trope in like horror movies, the passed out victim, like in Scream 2, and then you know, a million movies, but I love this part. Just like, what do you do? Do you tiptoe? Do you go really fast? Would that wake them up? There's just no, they're never right. These people never pick the right way.
They're never right. And they never finish the job. You know, like they assume that those sparks are killed them. And that's it. Like they never try to finish the job.
That is true. Like at that point, why not just get another Tommy building all his mass assets to have something sharp, cut his face, you know, cut his throat. But I don't know, would that really do much? But Trish, then again, she runs. She has Jason chase her because he's looking Ted White, the way he does this part, the way he's like sort of like kind of injured, but athletic. And he's like looking at Tommy and he chooses to chase Trish. She goes back into the house. She goes upstairs. So he follows him. And then she jumps out the window.
Well, she saw the dog do it earlier. So she figured. It was a circle window. Like I can understand going through like a normal window, I guess, you know, but a circle window and she dove head first. So I can't imagine that really working. Like she did like a dive through the window.
Yeah, no. She would have just died. I don't even
Or just like crash into the window and bounce back.
She would have broken her neck on the window. Because a window like that, the glass is so dense.
Right, right. But it was like a perfect dive right through, like she was diving through a hula hoop.
And she landed on a mattress covered in grass. So it was perfect. That thing bounced.
It did bounce.
I love that. And then meanwhile, this whole time, Tommy's upstairs because I guess he saw some of Rob's, like all the stuff that Rob collected about Jason, right? Because why would he have known to?
Well, he had the newspaper article.
That's what it was. Yeah. From Rob.
But by her jumping out of the window, she's leaving Jason in the house with Tommy.
No, they're at the adult
house. Oh, the other house. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Tommy, this time, he's like just bicking his own head as fast as he can. And like, dude, I love the fact when he comes outside, when he comes downstairs, he's like, Jason, remember. And you're like, what the fuck?
Why would Jason remember how he looked? I'm assuming he really didn't have any mirrors or anything.
Well, No. When he was a kid, he lived in a
But not house. When he looked like that with no hair and the.
Oh, he's always supposed to have like weird stringy or like no hair.
Oh, really? So he's always. Oh, so he was always looking little.
Yeah, because
he was always a weird looking kid.
Yeah, okay. Even when they get to like flashbacks in like, what is it? Like Takes Manhattan and Jason. You see him as a kid. He's got no hair.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I think that was pretty ballsy for Feldman to do because. What if it didn't work? Now he's like, damn it. I just shaved my head for nothing.
Yeah. What's funny is it's one of those tactics that like the audience knows is going to work because stuff like that has fooled Jason in the past, but there's absolutely in the context of the story and the, like with the people that are in this movie, there's no reason for them to believe it should work.
Yeah. But this is the first time they use Jason as the trickery, not the mom. Right, because they've tricked them. Right. So I'm saying
there's no real like there's no reason for Tommy to do this other than to have the audience go, oh yeah, this is a spin on what we've seen in the past.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you, he did a good job though, because he looked pretty abnormal when he did it.
Oh, I love when he's putting the makeup on around his eyes.
Yeah,
goes all out.
He he got him to calm down, let his guard down for a second so Trish could grab the machete, hit the mask off of his face.
Yep.
You know what? Every time I see Corey Feldman like that, it is freaky looking. Like he looks disturbing. He really does.
Yeah. Dude, the part of him going nuts on him is great. But when he is falling on the mask, slowly, on the machete,
So was that going through his eye? Like, what was that going? Just his face?
Yeah, it was through here.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
All right. So does he have like Wolverine healing powers? Because it seems to really heal. I mean, look at his hand.
When we get to, you know, when he's like reanimated in part 6. Yeah. And they actually, they talk about that in, they actually bring that up in Jason X.
Oh, really?
As well. There's a couple movies where they talk about how he like can regenerate. So, cause even in Jason X, yeah, they talk about how he can regenerate and then he gets like those nanobots in him and shit. And then
well, he would have to, because I can't imagine holding a machete with that hand the way it is, like that.
Split down the middle. I love that too. And he's looking at it and he's just like, wow. Oh, this happened.
A mere flesh wound.
And then she stops Tommy when he's going after. Yeah. They hug. And then you see the move of the arm. And then Tommy just goes fucking.
He wails on him. Like, I mean, like Jason should be chopped meat right now, you know, based on how long Tommy was doing it, but just to hear him say, die. Die. And like, I that was kind of disturbing. This whole scene was for a young child to be doing something like this. You know,
That's why Jason's back is all like gross and messed up in this, in where he's a, you know, zombie Jason, because he's just popped away.
Oh, so he, you know what? I was thinking he was laying on his back, but he was laying on his stomach because that's the way he fell. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I got you.
And then we get to end the movie. Which you think it's the end of the franchise or the end of Jason. You see his Tommy like with this look.
Well, I want to know how long was that after this whole ordeal? Like, was it right away? Hospital? At the hospital? Like
I think it's the next,
like the next day.
Okay. Because I was saying, like, you know, his hair didn't grow back.
It's the next day.
All right. So they ended it making it look like there's gonna whole like another way they could have gone in the series, that never came out.
That was one of the plans that they were before they went with how 5 goes. Tommy was gonna be the next Jason, and then they totally flipped it and they made him the hero.
A different Tommy, and then the sixth one.
Well, there was three different Tommies, right? You had Corey Feldman and two other ones, right?
And Fern cast all of them. Yeah. Look at that.
I've met the two adult Tommies, but I've never met Corey Feldman.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was Friday the 13th, part 4, the final chapter. Obviously, Egan loves this movie, so I'm going to ask him a little bit of a different question. So what would be the other two of your top three of Friday the 13th?
Definitely Jason Lives, as Jamie said before. I love I think it's like a perfect slasher. It's not a horror comedy, but it's a great horror movie with great comedy in it. There's some great one-liners. I love, if you're going zombie Jason, I love that movie. I know people love Kane Hodder, but he's great, but his sequels are just mostly shit. So if you're going that era of Jason, I got to go with Jason Lives. And then my other favorite, it's always a toss up for me between part 2 and the original. I love the original. It's a classic. I love Mrs. Voorhees as the killer. I love the characters. I heard someone recently call it a hangout movie. Because you're really, the whole movie, you're just watching these characters hang out, like they're friends, and then they're getting picked off one by one. I love part two. I really love the characters in part two. I love it's like a bigger scope by a fair amount. They're still at the camp, but there's more characters. Of course, it's our first look at Jason, and he's got that creepy bag head.
I love that bag head.
That's cool.
The bag head Jason is the best. I got the figure over here somewhere, but those, yeah, it's the even numbers for me. 4, 6, 4, 2 are my top three.
All right. So thank you to our horror sequel expert, Chris Egan. Jamie, what would be your other one? Because yours is 4, 6.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think I like 1 and 2. I mean, you know, 1 was definitely a creative story, and you know, the twist of the mom, you know, you're thinking it's something else, and you know, like I thought that was great. 2, I absolutely love with the bag head. I mean, that was so creepy. The only thing I didn't like about 2 is Jason was a lot smaller. You know, he was a smaller Jason. So like, you know, like when you see the later movies, he's such a powerful like presence. And in 2, he wasn't that. You know, it's the only thing I didn't like, but I think one and two are the second, like right there. I think they're both very good. So
he started bloating because he was dead. He was dying.
It's all water weight.
It's all water weight. Yeah, no, I like those, but just for like fun, like I love 4, 6, and I always enjoyed 8, but 7. I don't know why. I always like 7. I have no idea. Maybe Bernie Lomax dying in it.
What's the name of 7?
New Blood.
New Blood. Yeah. 7 is fun. 7's a good time, but that's the one that got like absolutely cut to pieces by the studio.
Oh, I know, but the yeah.
There's no gore or anything. It just feels very neutered. It's a fun flick though. I don't remember that one.
Yeah, you should watch it again. It's pretty good.
You could do far worse for a slasher sequel.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Egan. 6 timer now. Look at that, man. Get that tattooed. Teardrops, I think, so everybody can see them. Little like movie reels under your left eye.
Sequels only on your back.
Maybe down the forearm.
Yeah. All right. So the next sequel up is another part 4. It's Iron Eagle 4 on the Attack. It stars Lou Gossett Jr. and next week's guest, Jason Cadeau, who takes over the role that Jason Gedrick had in the original of Doug Masters. Another Doug movie? What? So Jason, I'm actually interviewing for the second time because I accidentally deleted the interview. But thank God, the one person that we've interviewed so many amazing people, but he was so down. He was like, let's do it. Let's get it done. So I'm doing that over the next few days.
He's awesome.
And he has great stories about Lou Gossett Jr., which I'm sure he'll tell me again. And then talking about growing up in Toronto and how he loved Iron Eagle as a kid. So it was really fitting that he was able to do that role. So yeah, so don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast, follow us on all social media at Sequels Only, and don't forget to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.